get out your dancing shoes. It's time for Stay Human. If you happen to be driving right now, then butt dancing is just fine. But otherwise, if you can clap your hands, you can dance. Great music coming up in this dance party edition of Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg, and I want to tell you, I had so much fun putting today's program together. I was all alone at KXC Studios by the river. Alone because the station was basically closed, at most one or two people there at a time. This was in April of 2020, if you remember those weird COVID weeks and months. Anyway, there was no one else at the station, so I could turn the monitor up as loud as I liked, and I like it loud. Took off my headphones and just danced like no one was watching. You might want to turn up the volume on your radio once or twice in this hour, because whatever else you've got going on, probably you could be dancing while you do it. Early on during the COVID lockdown, I called one of my guides to leading a joyful life, Terry Leinbach in Black Duck. As I expected, she was managing the lockdown in fine style and dancing in color.
So the other day, I've been painting these big 4x4 things, and I've been doing it in the basement. Well, it finally got warm enough so I could take my acrylic paints, leave them up there, and have it on an easel. And the boys have a fantastic sound system up there. So first was Patty Griffith's Heavenly Day. So my style of painting is abstract. So I stand back. Sometimes I'll even have a long piece of dowel on the end of the paintbrush. So it just naturally ran into painting while I'm doing it. And I was, you know, thinking about the whole corona thing, and I'd already glued on some squares that could be homes onto the big canvas. So I started thinking about people in those squares, people living in those squares. We're all isolated, and every single emotion possible has been expressed to me by friends living in those squares. But then I look out, and I mean, we wouldn't even know this thing was happening if we didn't have machines. The river is starting to break, the sun's shining, And so then I was able to, and I'm trying to think of what music I'd gotten to at this point. I turned off what I had on. It got a little gloomy. I'm trying to think, what was it? It might have been Sweet Honey, I think. So then I thought, around these homes, it's still all green. You guys, the geese are coming back. Stuff's popping up. Tulips are popping up. So the whole rest of the painting became joyful music. First was a little gloomy. Joyful music with bright colors.
That's Terry Leinbach. I've danced with her more than a few times over the years, including out on the Manitoba Prairie with thousands of other barefoot revelers when the time is right.
What time is it?
It's mango time.
Now the number one time special of the year. It's mango time, mango time. In Africa, the big rain come again. It's mango time. Up in the trees, and it's mango time, see everywhere the big green and yellow juicy, it's mango time, the mango time, it's mango time, my feet. Now my woman complained to me, the mango time, mango time, the mango time. Night and day while you always up in the trees, me you never see. At the mango time, at the mango time. Eating mangoes all the way down through the years. Eating mangoes till they come out of our ears. When it's mango time, mango time. Mango, mango, mango time. It's mango time in Africa, mango time. It's mango time in Africa, mango time. Up inside of my mango trees. At mango time, the mango time. At the mango time. Now the mango is so juicy and so sweet. At the mango time, the mango time. Will it take about through when you start to eat? At the mango time, the mango time. Mango time. Now when you finish the mango, please you plant the seed, so everybody in the future have a mango tree. Eating mangoes all the way down through the years. Eating mangoes till they come out of our ears. When it's mango time, mango time. Mango, mango, mango time. It's mango time in Africa, mango time. It's mango time in Africa, mango time. It's mango time.
important than tea time in England, Great Britain. It's mango time.
That's Tony Bird, a great favorite at the Winnipeg Folk Festival way back in the day. Still to come in this hour, we'll go ballroom dancing. We'll let it fly in the heart of Haight-Ashbury and roll out the barrel on the Iron Range. My granddaughter, Natalia, just went to her first school dance. She's in sixth grade. The idea of a middle school dance to me smells like Old Spice aftershave. Not that I was shaving yet, but I don't know, slapping that astringent onto my cheeks made me feel pretty grown up. But is this shirt too dorky? Happy to say, Natalia seems to not be suffering any anxiety around it. They're having a winter one too, she told me, and a spring dance. She's planning ahead. She's considering being on the decoration committee. I think the dance was a success for her, although, of course, the inner life of sixth grade girls is not exactly visible to their grandpas. All I could definitely get out of her was this. Her mom took her to buy a new dress with a bow on it. Our next teller today, Sue Searing, has this from dancing class.
When I was in sixth grade, my parents signed me up for Mrs. Wallace's Friday night ballroom dancing class at the YWCA. It was not my idea. I was socially awkward and physically uncoordinated. And of course, that was exactly why my parents thought dance lessons might be necessary. So we were all surprised when it turned out that I loved it. I discovered I had a good sense of rhythm, and I quickly caught on to the foxtrot and the rumba, and especially the waltz. For the first time, after years of humiliation in gym class, I began to feel confident moving my body in public. And another great thing about dance lessons, John Varchick. I hadn't gotten my period yet, my breasts hadn't developed, but the hormones were beginning to bubble. I had a series of crushes on various boys, but my unrequited affections always returned to the unattainable John Varchick. He was every sixth grade girl's heartthrob, blonde, blue-eyed, well-behaved, and very important, taller than me. Well, inevitably, more girls than boys registered for the class, which meant that the boys had their pick of partners. So they rarely chose unpopular girls like me. But Mrs. Wallace had a way of evening things out. She called it a tagline. She gathered the surplus girls at one end of the gym, and then, every through few measures of the music, she released one or two of us out onto the dance floor, where we could cut in on any couple we wanted. And that's how, every Friday, I spent a couple of golden minutes in John's arms until another girl cut in on us. The weeks flew by, and soon our ballroom class was almost over. Mrs. Wallace announced that the final class would not consist of lessons, but would be the spring cotillion, a sort of prom where we would show off everything we'd learned. The boys were to wear suits and ties. The girls were to come in their best party dresses. My mother sewed me a new dress of blue polished cotton with a wide swingy skirt, and she bought me my first pair of nylon stockings. On the night of the cotillion, the boys sat on folding chairs along one side of the gym, looking uncomfortable in their fancy clothes. And we girls sat on the other side, giggling and whispering. Mrs. Wallace clapped her hands and said it was time for the first dance. And the boys stood up, walked across the room, and invited girls to dance. And no one asked me. And then the second dance. And no one asked me. And I thought, if Mrs. Wallace doesn't have a tagline, it's going to be a very long night. Then she announced that the third dance would be a waltz contest. I slumped back in my chair. A contest wouldn't have a tagline. And then I looked up, and I saw John Varchick leap out of his seat, race walk across the gym, stop right in front of me. "May I have this dance?" he asked. And stunned, I stood up and took his arm. Surrounded by other couples, we settled into the box step. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Mrs. Wallace circulated around the perimeter, every now and then wading into the crowd, tapping couples on the shoulder and sending them to the sidelines. As space opened up, John began to twirl me under his arm. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I gazed up at his handsome face, which was frozen in concentration. When I looked away, I realized that there was only one other couple left on the floor besides us. John leaned in and whispered, "Can you do the Viennese?" "Yes, I can." 1, 2, 3. We were gliding in half circles, huge swooping arcs from one end of the gym to the other, my full skirt billowing out, my feet barely touching the wooden floor as we were swept away on the music. Time seemed to stretch until there was nothing in my world except John and the waltz. Then the record ended, and John grinned down at me as the applause began. As a prize, we each got to choose any record from Mrs. Wallace's collection of danceable 45s. John asked for Walk Don't Run by The Ventures. I just stammered. I couldn't remember the names of any of the pieces we'd practiced to. Mrs. Wallace got impatient. "Here, Sue, you'll like this one." It was Tony Bennett, "I Left My Heart in San Francisco." Me, I left my heart at the YWCA. John didn't ask me to dance again at the Cotillion. He didn't sign up for the class the next year, and then he transferred to a different school. I never saw him again. Eventually, I found my true love. I hope he did, too. As it turned out, Mrs. Wallace greatly exaggerated the value of ballroom dancing to my future social life. It's been years since I waltzed with anyone. I'd probably trip over my own feet if I tried. But I will never forget how it felt dancing the Viennese waltz with John.
Thanks to Sue Searing. You can hear more from her at SueSearing.com. This program is called Stay Human, and today we're doing that with dancing music and dancing stories. I called up Lambert Kaloji's daughter Doris and told her that I wanted to make a Dance and Shoes radio show.
First of all, good for you, young man, for talking about dance and thinking about dance and including those polkas. Let's just start right there. You know, especially now, no young people like yourself think about polkas anymore. So good for you, including polkas and dance. Let's just start right there. Check that box. So, Michael, I grew up in Chisholm, which is the center, exactly the center of the polka universe, Chisholm, Minnesota. And Iron World was there, you know, when it was Iron World, and there was lots and lots of polka dancing there. I grew up with a father who loved to dance, and my father, these are the things that still to this day, 50 years later, are still so intense and strike me so deeply. And that is that guys like my dad, who was just hardened in so many ways, those guys worked in the open pits and their fathers worked underground and their parents were immigrants. And in a lot of ways, they had really hard lives. And there was no fluff really anywhere. But when those old timers got on the dance floor, it was like magic. They were transformed. When those old timers got on the dance floor, they were transformed. Michael, I used to go out with my mom and dad, you know, when I became, I don't know, 18, whatever the age was then. And I would go out with them just to hang out in the polka bars and dance and watch the old people dance. I just loved going with them to hang out around the polka scene. There were old timers, lots of them, that could hardly walk, old people that could hardly walk. And when they got on the dance floor, they would just float. People that had really hard lives. And I'm telling you, they all, you know, almost came in there with walkers or a cane, and they'd come to the Sabin O'Neill in Chisholm or the Frankie Kramer's dance bar in Gilbert there. And they would just seem so decrepit. And they would, you know, they'd get to that booth and they'd sit down and order a beer. And when their favorite song came on, or when that button box really got fired up, that button accordion, they just would smile and grab their partner and they would just move with grace and ease. Just something magic to watch. That is still with me, that those old timers that had a hard life and they didn't smile much and they just worked really hard, and some of them so old they could barely move. When they got on that dance floor, it was a different world. Old timers, they'd shake their finger at you and say, you know, if you work hard, it's okay to play hard. And when they were on that dance floor, they were playing hard. After every song, you know, my dad would say, clap for that musician. Don't be stingy. Clap for that musician. He's working hard. So even though I grew up in Chisholm, in the heart of the polka dancing universe, I married a young man from the East Coast. And, you know, my dad really did kind of worry about, was this young man that I married from the East Coast, was he going to be able to dance? Was he going to be able to be in the polka hall there and not embarrass the family? This is just between you and I and the radio, so don't tell Corey, but, you know, Corey loves to dance. And we have polka'd and polka'd and polka'd, but he never really quite got it. I'm just saying, he's got a great heart, and he has polka'd a million miles with me. But, you know, when you compare him to the Rangers, the Iron Rangers, he's just a teeny bit off. But it's the effort that counts, right? It's the thought that counts. Michael, my grandmother danced at my wedding, and she was 80. She was 80 years old, and she danced at my wedding, and she sat in that chair, and people would kind of joke with her about dancing, and she'd kind of wave them off and grumble a little bit in Polish. And the guy that got her up was a kid to her, one of my elders, one of my father's buddies from the neighborhood. And Yefka, come on, come on, Yefka. And he grabbed my grandma's hand and pulled her on the dance floor, and my grandmother danced at my wedding. Polkas, let's be clear. When those gents asked a woman to dance, by golly, it was well done. It was respectful, and it was fun, and it didn't matter. Here's the other thing with those old-timers that I spent a lifetime dancing with. Those old-timers, it didn't matter how much they had to drink. They could drink and drink and drink and get out on that dance floor and not miss a beat and still be as graceful and as fluid as you could imagine. There was just, that dancing was like a religion for those people. And they passed that on. I was lucky to hang out with those old timers.
That's Doris Kaloji. I asked her if I should play one of the old-time polka bands, and she said, play Lynn Marie. She's the younger generation, but the old-timers really like her because she's the real thing. Happy Feet. Early on, the polkas of the Iron Range were a staple here on Northern Community Radio, broadcasting on KAXE and KBXE, streaming at KAXE.org for rangers scattered all over the world. We receive support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for connecting you to Northern Minnesota. It's time now to go ballroom dancing with Steve and Kate Lavalier. They had danced together countless times. They'd been married almost 40 years when they decided to take the ballroom dancing class taught by Pam and Jeff Johnson through the Itasca Area Community Education. Kate told me that she and Steve's dancing history and their friendship with Pam Johnson goes back farther than that.
When we were in ninth grade, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go to square dance lessons with her. And I thought, I don't know, that sounds kind of fun. I can go to square dance lessons. I can do that. And the Lavalier twins were also at square dance lessons.
because my parents were square dancers.
And Pam's mom was the square dance caller. And so that's sort of how we knew of Pam. And then we met Pam through dance at the Rife. Brenna was in her clogging class, and we really, really liked her a lot. And we knew Jeff, so we thought, oh, there's a connection here. And so Steve and I danced, like, probably in a square together when we were in ninth grade.
And we did find it was fun.
It was fun. It was really fun.
We caught on pretty quickly in the beginning. We seemed like we caught the rhythm of things, and so it is fun. I mean, it's fun dancing together and moving with the music. I mean, to me, it's almost therapeutic. Although we almost needed some counseling.
Well, Steve liked the bolero because it was slow.
It was slow, but I just
it was pretty.
I love the way it slowed. I mean, it just you almost feel like you're in kind of a zen when it's working right. So we did the bolero, we did Foxtrot.
I just loved a good waltz, and you know, the songs are real different than I was used to. I mean, I'm sort of a dance music is. I have this definition of dance music, and this music was not necessarily like dance music, but one of the most favorite waltzes for me was Amanda. I think it was maybe Don Williams. It was like a 70s like Western song, but oh man, I just loved that waltz. It was really complicated, and there were lots of different moves in it, and it was just so fun when it worked well. The cha-cha was fun. I really liked the jive, the swing dance, but boy, that just didn't work so well for us a lot of the time. So it was just like, oh gosh, I just want to dance this thing, but it wasn't happening.
Yeah. And you know, but I feel like we learned so much besides the dance.
Well, you don't want to know, Michael.
No, we learned, how we get along and the frustrations we had at times with each other. And I guess I learned, I don't mind making mistakes. And it's kind of like, I don't really care if anyone's watching or not. Katie, when she got out on the dance floor, she wanted to.
I wanted to dance, man.
And she didn't want to have mistakes, although everyone's, I think, maybe thinking that same thing. But that was a struggle for her because I made mistakes.
These feet go all different directions, and I'm supposed to know how to keep up with those feet.
They are hard to control at times, Michael. When it works, it's beautiful.
It was good. I mean, I think it's something we're going to, maybe we can use it in a nursing home even. We could put on our cues and go, I remember this one.
I don't know about that. Maybe with a little rehearsal.
Okay, push the furniture back now, you two, and the rest of you, too. Let's waltz.
Yeah.
Got your radio on, turn it up real loud. No, I mean really loud. Go ahead, you're not gonna break anything.
Alza la frente en alto y camina bien. Alza la frente en alto. Alza la frente en alto y camina. Alza la frente en alto. Alza la frente en alto y camina bien. Alza la frente en alto. descarado. Anda, camina, camina, buen pescado. Anda, camina, no seas tan descarado. Anda, camina, camina, buen pescado. Anda, camina, no seas tan descarado. Anda, camina.
That's the Preservation Hall Jazz Band from their hot new release called Cuba Tuba. Our final dancing story on today's show comes from Northwood storyteller Terry O'Brien, how she learned how.
Like many young girls, my first dance steps were taken with my father, our hands clasped, my stocking feet atop his feet as he traced the box step, a figure basic to ballroom dancing. Kids of my era graduated to the polka, the waltz, or the butterfly. Old-time dances learned at wedding dances, where girls were squired around the church hall by their dads and uncles, while boys practiced out of view in the corner with their grandmothers and aunties. The butterfly doesn't require much expertise, but it does take two partners. Say, if you're a boy, there would be two aunties or two girl cousins, like the wings of the butterfly, one linked on each of your arms. A dance both sedate and raucous. During the livelier portion, the once shy boy then whirled his partners so vigorously as to break their hold and send them off perilously, teetering to the edge of the dance floor. Like plodding planets to his red-hot comet spun to the reaches of their outer orbits. My family never went to a wedding dance. I would learn the polka, waltz, and butterfly much later in life. In eighth grade, we square danced. I can't imagine that this was an official part of our Catholic elementary school curriculum. And it's even harder to fathom that Sister Selena meant to encourage girls and boys to partner up under any circumstances. She was an imposing figure in the ivory habit with long black veil of a Dominican nun. Behind her back, we called her Big John. Not because she stood 6'6" like the infamously strong minor in Jimmy Dean's 1961 release of the same name, although she, like him, might have weighed 245. She earned the nickname because everyone knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John. Big Bad John. Desks pushed aside. Her mouth screwed in a scowl so tight, her lips disappeared. Sister Selena roughly grabbed reluctant dancers by the shoulder and shoved them in the direction of a girl. I hoped I wouldn't be paired with Joey. He might have been the smartest kid in our class, but he was also one of the shortest boys, and I was the second tallest girl. And he had the coldest, the wettest, sweatiest hands. Despite our fumbles and stumbles and our glaring dance master who kept time by pounding the heel of the long blackboard pointer on the floor, we learned to do-si-do and duck for the oyster, dive for the clam. In high school, I was dragged to teen dances by my older sister and her friends. Marion Ballroom was a Knights of Columbus Hall located in a Minneapolis suburb. Perhaps because of its Catholic connection, my parents allowed us to go. Or maybe my folks, like many others, operated under the dubious assumption that when older kids are saddled with younger siblings, nobody gets into trouble. Mom and Dad had nothing to worry about. Boys occupied one side of the hall, girls on the other. A wide no-man's land separated the genders. Red-faced with embarrassment, I stood with one arm clutched protectively across my chest, my hand plucking nervously at my Peter Pan collar. I never learned how to do the mashed potatoes, the jerk, the hitchhiker, or most any of the signature dances of the 60s. Real dancing would elude me for years to come. Yes, I went to a few proms and school-sponsored so-called formal dances. These were staid affairs, played not by the popular groups of the era, like the Chancellors or Gregory D. and the Avantes. No Beatles songs were allowed. As Sister St. Philip cautioned cryptically, girls, it all starts with I want to hold your hand. These combos rendered insipid covers of slow dances from eras long past. Couples locked in awkward holds, rocked dully back and forth. The boys attempting not to crush their dates' corsages, nor step on their toes and tangle their feet in tulle and satin. I married my blind date for my senior prom. I remember how wowed I was by his good looks when I opened the front door and saw him for the first time. He played keyboards in a band, the Idols. Sounds for the In Crowd, another of the many white boy teen bands influenced by the British invasion. They never achieved the prominence of the Castaways, the Underbeats, or the Trashmen. I tagged along to their gigs, but never danced. Girlfriends of the band were expected to sit quietly, gaze adoringly. Marriage came after 3 years of college, during the Vietnam War, following a trip to the West Coast. In the summer of 1969, while my boyfriend rushed off to Woodstock, partially funded by a loan from me, I, nose to the collegiate grindstone, stayed home, unwilling to interrupt my summer classes. When coursework concluded, eager to capture something of fleeting summer, a girlfriend and I caught a ride to Seattle and then hitchhiked from there to San Francisco. How we found our way to the Fillmore, I don't recall. But I can say that at the corner of Fillmore and Geary, on the second floor of the venerable and then hippie Mecca dance hall, my life was forever changed. It had nothing to do with drugs, booze, or boys, none of which I indulged in that night, I swear. It had everything to do with the third act of the night. First up is C Train, followed by Keith Hartley, then a Latin rock group. Six young men with full heads of gorgeous dark curly hair step onto stage. Staccato slap slap, a tight drum head. Ting ting tong, a drum's rim song. Snare a buzz, a sizzle of cymbals. Thump thump, a kick drum. Three percussionists tune their instruments. Rumble of bass echoes stroke of guitar. Hammond organ pours forth chords of chili, spiced, honey. Santana seizes the stage. Soaring guitar, searing rhythms, Latin American, Caribbean, African rhythms. Dancers unite with players and rhythm. Hips shake, hair swings, breasts sway, sweat shimmers. Everyone chases the beat, and when they catch it, they move. I join them. I am dancing. Gone is the child's shyness. The self-conscious adolescent evanesces. I cast off my college girl cloak of conscientiousness. I dance. No set footwork to follow. No lefts or rights to confuse. No partner. Free to move, I freely move. Pure energy fused with emotion. At last and forever after, I am a dancer. Oye, ¿cómo va? This is the story of a night In 1969, when Santana changed my life.
Thanks to Lady Gaga and Santana and to Terry O'Brien, Steve and Kate Lavalier, Doris Kologi, Sue Searing, and Terry Leinbach, all of them dancing on. Hope you will too. Join us next week at this time for words and music for spirit and courage.
Pick it up like